In 3, 2, 1.
My guest today believes change is inevitable and should be embraced, leading to innovative solutions and uncovering untapped potential within each of us. His work reflects his mission to help individuals and organizations hit their mark by fostering a work environment of high productivity and satisfaction. With a focus on discovery and application, he offers a comprehensive approach to identifying opportunities for growth. So get ready to gain valuable insights and practical strategies as we dive into a conversation with Tony Rusing, a catalyst for personal and professional growth in today's dynamic business landscape. Well, hi, Tony. Welcome to the program. We're delighted to have you.
It's a privilege to be here.
Now, where are we speaking to you from today? Somewhere warm, I'm assuming.
It is warm where I am most of the time. We're in Clearwater, Florida, and we live on the border of Clearwater and Dunedin, which is a real small, unique little community.
Lovely. We're glad to have you and talking about aiming your sights. And you've been a professional speaker and leader and working with organizations, leaderships, and coaching for a number of decades. How did Tony get to be where Tony is? Let's go back in history just a little bit. What was your career path? And then what led you to where you're doing today?
I was still listening to my dad, and he suggested that I join the Army. And he said that because I needed to mature a little bit, and that'll certainly help you with that. So I'm standing in a chow line, and the guy, three or four people ahead of me, says he's a barber. And I thought, wow, maybe I need to talk to him, because I always wanted to be in business for myself, and I knew I could run a barbershop. So we did. We had a nice conversation, and I set my career path on being in the barber business. But that school was filled up at the time, and I ended up going to school and becoming a cosmetologist. And it honestly turned out to a better deal for me. I didn't know it at the time. But again, I wanted to be in business for myself. I knew I could do that. And I got bored after about 3 years and started looking for what else can I do in this field. And fortunately, I went to a convention, saw someone do a head of hair demonstrating what they were doing and selling products. So I thought, I can do that, I think. And it took me 3 years. I bird dog every company I could find and finally was hired for $25 a day in expense. I spent 3 years, which is the typical amount of time that you spend in that field. I spent another 17 years in that field. I don't use this word often, but I was a star in the hair business, okay? You can put my picture on a brochure and 500 people would show up to see what I was going to do.
You were like what's his name? I saw a guy in the 80s.
Yeah, Adele Sassoon was one of the people in the 80s.
Sure.
Guillaume and all of these, Mr. Somebody.
Yeah.
My name was Mr. Antone at the time. And I got, that was hard. But the nice part was I was a celebrity in one field, but when I got to the airport, nobody knew me. So I was pretty excited. I had a personal life and I had a celebrity life.
Oh, that's awesome. And so you leveraged that into professional speaking and you started to change your focus on your subject matter.
Yes.
So what led you to this? Because you do focus on excellence. And I thought it was because you emphasized that. So you share with us on the website what commitment to excellence means in the context of modern business. Why is that so crucial in today's world?
In today's world, we find a lot of people who want to do just enough, and just enough is not enough. Inside of each one of us is a set of gifts and talents. And what you do with that gift and talent is either continue to work with it and hone it and develop it, and then put your focus where it belongs in my mind, and that's on the people that you're going to be sharing this information with. And I always say that the most important person in my audience is the person sitting in the chair. And when you do things that are going to help other people, there's a benefit for yourself, but it can't be a selfish reason. It has to be a genuineness and an authenticity that helps people recognize. And excellence is, I think, as you said, Michael, a great word to define that. And that's what we all need to do.
Yeah. You don't see it much in today's world, do you? Like the culture's definitely changed. We have 5 generations of workers now out in the field. I'm on that baby boomer side of things. Our work ethics were different. And I'm not saying they're better. It's interesting. I watched with the millennials, the Gen X, and we all look, you probably had a paper route. You probably,
yeah. Social boy.
Yeah, exactly. And what's interesting is successful entrepreneurs, I always ask them a question. And it's a safe assumption. You had a paper route, didn't you? And we learned how to work and we learned how to work early. The younger generations today, they approach it differently. Work-life balance, I think. Like in my generation, it was just work and produce. But it's finding that nice work balance, that quality of life and those types of things. So I think excellence has evolved. So what we used to think was excellence might not be today, but maybe the new version of excellence. What does that look like? So I think you summed it up nice. You emphasize the importance, though, of building confidence, competence, and integrity in the workplace. Can you give us some examples of why those qualities are important today and how they contribute to the success of an organization or a business?
In my mind, confidence comes from repetition and doing the right things and doing them more often. I think we all start out with a little anxiety about who we are and what we want to accomplish. And I believe it starts in the home. You're either encouraged or you're not encouraged. And my mom and dad were very encouraging. And my mother wouldn't say anything to me directly about that. But I would hear her saying to her friends, you know, he's going to be a leader. He's going to be a leader. He's going to be doing this. That always made me feel good. And I wish she'd said it directly to me. But she was a very strong lady who had very strong principles. And she believed you do not get anything for nothing. You have to absolutely do something and make that something be worthwhile.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you talked about leadership and the importance, but you also talk about like personal leadership. How it applies to us personally and within organizations. So we have people who are listening to our podcast that are leaders, and we have people who we are aspiring leaders or leaders in training. All right, what are the things that leaders need to have today to cope with the issues of the day? Because they're changing. They're different than I started. How have they evolved, and what habits should we be developing as leaders?
That's a great question. And the way you position it, I think, speak clear to what was and what we have now. And there is a big difference. For an example, when you and I were coming up, everything was pretty autocratic.
Yeah.
Do this. Okay. And that was it. No questions.
Command and control. Yeah.
And control. And the leaders of that time obviously were impacted by World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, where they were in those positions and they were told to do something and they did it. And then people started reflecting on what they were being asked to do. And how does this morally connect with our world? How does this connect with us individually? And how does it connect to the family? And I think when those questions started coming up, people started realizing that leadership is not necessarily from the front of a room or from the front of a group or at the top of the organization. It happens when the leader recognizes he has to help others find their way and develop leaders by giving them the confidence, helping them get their confidence.
Leadership, as it's evolved, I've been doing a lot of reading lately and talking about the different leaders historically. And it seems to be, and this is something I'm curious that I'm sure you can address, you can be a leader, you can have the leadership qualities, and you can lead in times of crisis, you can lead in times of war. And on the personal side, you might not have it all put together. So a couple of examples that come to mind, and you wonder, how does that fix? Is I remember when we had 9/11, right? Everybody remembers that. And then we had the mayor of New York, Rudy Giuliani, who stepped up, gave confidence and was America's mayor. We love that guy, right? We love that guy. And so he did wonderful things. He had some great qualities, which, you know, endeared us to him. And he was leading by virtue of just being in the right place when doing that. And then we've seen him in the last decade or so fall off the wagon a little bit. And he's in lots of hot water, lots of different issues. But that doesn't really take away from his leadership capability when he's in that role, but it just maybe has some human failings. Whatever. Kennedy, I was reading about, you know, during the Bay of Pigs, you know, he was leading that whole process, but at the same time, he had a mistress that he was seeing as well, you know. So it's interesting to see the character of some of these leaders, their personal character, that we might judge it. We might judge it and go, okay, maybe he's not a good leader because they're doing this, or they have failings there because no one's perfect. No one's perfect. And we all have that. And yet they might be good leaders. So what are the qualities and the attributes? And does that matter? Like in today's world, it seems to me like it kind of does matter. We see modern leaders, like you've got the Elon Musks of the world coming in, and we see where he's done really well with leadership. Then we see some examples where it hasn't done well with the Twitter debacle. That's the best way to describe it, just how employees were treated. Now we talk to people. And then yet we've seen what they do on the space side of things where it could be amazing. So what are the attributes, and should we expect nothing but to be saints, our leaders to be saints, or should we be excusing them for some of their behavior and looking to the qualities there? What's your take on that?
It's an interesting question. And if I had the answer to that, I would love to have the answer to that completely, but I can give you an opinion. I can share with you my impressions of it, but I think we're still looking for the real hard evidence. But I can say this, today, too many people We're ready to value judge someone as opposed to observe them and continue to catch them doing the right things because all of us do the wrong thing.
Yeah.
We fail, we make mistakes, we goof up. But that means we're either going to do that and feel sorry for ourselves, or we're going to pick our fanny up and do something different.
Yeah.
And I think that applies to leadership as well. And so the leader today who is recognizing that they have really seven areas that they need to play in at all times: the physical area, the mental area, the social area, the spiritual area, financial area, the career, and their family area. And if you take those seven pieces and you look at that, the good leaders today have a balance in that to a large extent. For an example, physically, they have a good doctor, they have a good dentist, they exercise, they eat the right kind of thing. And the mental piece of this, they're constantly expanding their knowledge base. So if you take each one of those and you look at those seven pieces, a leader today has to focus in a way that there is some homeostasis or balance to each one of them. And you read, you study, you go to workshops, you do interviews, you do all those things that are going to help you find your way. And then you have to absolutely put a stop to value judging others and say, well, I wouldn't have done that. Well, good for you. I'm glad you wouldn't. But this person did it, and they're not going to change that necessarily. But try to catch them doing the right things. And that's important.
No, I think that's a good analysis, really. I think because we all have habits, good habits. We all have bad habits. And you talk about the power of choices that become habits. Those are the things which do it. But when it comes to leadership, I think, like you say, you can have all these attributes or these seven, and you might have your family life. I met lots of leaders that are great leaders, but then their family life sucks, you know, and it's terrible. So you've got to juggle those balls. You've got to spin those plates. Right. So you've got all seven of those and find the balance, and nobody's going to have it perfect. And I love that no judgment, period. That's not our job anyway. Mm-hmm. And pertain, because you can be a good leader, you could be doing your job, but on the personal side, you might be absolutely terrible because there are sacrifices to be made sometimes.
Let me add something to this that I live with this and believe it down to my toes. When we started seeing women come into the workplace, it was the best thing that could possibly happen because they bring to the workplace uniqueness men knew nothing about. Taylorism from back when leaders would do this and why, I don't care why you do it. When they were doing stuff like that, it was wrong. And I think that women have brought a tremendous amount of understanding to the role of leadership, and they need to be acknowledged for that. And I don't know that they are. In some industries they are, but in many industries they're still maligned, and that shouldn't happen.
No, you're talking emotional intelligence, I think, and that's exactly what they brought to the table. And that's why they make phenomenal leaders, and they can't do it to compete with men. I remember working with some banks back a couple decades ago, and they wanted to train their women leaders, and some of them, one of the first things we're teaching them is don't do it like men, just be you, do it like you do it, because that's the power, that's your uniqueness with it. We have some great qualities, but that old school, you know, it's old school, just best way. We need to change the thinking up, and that makes sense. But you talk about change as well. And we live in a state of constant change. You've seen it change over our years. And you talk about embracing change rather than fighting it is the key. Can you share any examples or stories where some of the businesses that you've worked with have successfully navigated change by maybe applying some fresh ideas to some old thinking?
The first person and the first business that comes to mind was an upscale grocery store chain in St. Louis that I had the privilege of working with for almost 18 years. And as an independent contractor, I would go in and work with their organization on a pretty regular basis. And the thing that they did, which really impressed me, because if you look back, that was 10 years ago, and you tag 18 years onto that, we're looking at almost 30 years ago. These folks were putting the first paragraph of their mission statement on the employees that were working. The emphasis was on those folks who were seeing the actual customer walking through the door. And they treated those people with so much dignity and so much respect that they wanted to be there. They wanted to work there. And they saw their work as meaningful. And so the second paragraph was about the external customer. But this internal customer, this customer service representative, the person that's at the cashier, the person that's bagging groceries or cutting meat, all of these folks were really treated extremely well. And that, in my mind, is what you're describing when you say change. And I have a little ditty that I use all the time in a workshop. If I want the situation to change, the change begins with me. And I ask everyone to write it down and make it an I statement. If I want the situation, because it has to happen, it has to start.
Start somewhere. Yeah. No, it makes sense. And the thinking's changed. When you've been around for a few decades like we have, you see the evolution of the business and how companies can navigate it, and some can't. There's the old school companies, which you had your CEOs of the IBMs, you had Lee Iacocca's, that these were the old command and control leaders, right? And who's a good example of leadership today? Who would you say, if there's any names that come to mind on leaders that you would say leader, and they don't have to be in business, they can be in general. Who do you see from a true leadership that somebody has, maybe on the corporate side, maybe on the part that you'd say, this person has some great qualities and here's their leadership qualities and here's why?
I do business with an organization that is in the upscale door business. So they put doors on hospitals and in, on banks and places like that. This gentleman's name is Joe Lopez, and I started doing business with him in 2014, and he just did invite me down to do a program for him this last week. And this person treats his employees with what I'm describing, all the dignity and all the respect. And he catches them doing good, doing well. And he's very sincere in what he has for them. And that is, when you perform and when you bring your best game here, we're going to reward it. We're going to reward it with all the enthusiasm that we can, the spirit that's within that work. And we're also going to make certain that we continue to grow an organization that invites people of that ilk into the organization. So I do a little thing with something close to the DIST system, but it's my own version of it, and all of it have that. And I was astounded when the 38 people I had in the audience this last week were so incredibly balanced in the perception of four quadrants that I work in. And I was stunned. And I said, I've done this for a long time. I've never seen anything so equal, but it's because of Joe's leadership.
That's awesome.
It's the way he hires and helps people find their way.
Yeah. And that's really the role of leadership, isn't it? The example I saw, which really struck with me, and it's one that I use all the time, is it's usually you have a pyramid, and at the top of the pyramid is the top of the leaders. And in typical hierarchical structures, we flip it around so that the base of the pyramid's up. So at the bottom, you have the leader supporting the organization. So what do you need? What do you need? How can I empower you? How can I enable you?
I love that. And that is the example that should be there. And there were folks back in the 60s and 70s who practiced that. It goes back to the 50s. Sandy McDonald of McDonald Aircraft, which became McDonnell Douglas, and now it's Boeing. But Sandy McDonald would walk on the floor, and he knew every one of his 600 employees. And he would ask them about their family. He would ask them about, how are things going? Do you need anything? This man was outrageously good at what he did, because he saw that the only way he could achieve and accomplish something was with the folks that were backing him up. And man, they would go to the wall for him because of that.
And I think that still goes today. This episode is sponsored in part by Rainmaker Digital Solutions, featuring ActiveCampaign. Looking to drive growth with customer experience automation? ActiveCampaign, the number one marketing automation platform for e-commerce, B2C and B2B companies, gives you the email marketing, marketing automation, and CRM tools you need to create incredible customer experiences. ActiveCampaign is the platform we use to reach, nurture, convert, and grow our business, and you can use it to grow yours. You can see why 150,000 plus businesses like yours choose ActiveCampaign to help them grow and become preferred in the markets they serve. You can also start your free trial by visiting our website and clicking on the ActiveCampaign trial link. As a bonus, we'll also give you a digital copy of my book, Becoming Preferred: How to Outsell the Competition. And in the interest of full disclosure, I am a shareholder in the company. And now back to my conversation with Tony Rusing. What would you say are the qualities for people who are building companies? Say we have a lot of people, listeners, who are startups. They're starting their company. We have people who've been with organizations for a while. They're looking at renovating their organizations and their companies. What should somebody who maybe wants to take a leadership track or build that proper habits that will support them in their bid for leadership, or to be available for leadership, should that calling come on them, because not everybody's ready for that, it changes. What can they do to prepare effectively?
Recognize always that they are not doing this on their own. And one of the biggest mistakes that I think people make is believing that what they've accomplished, they did. And the truth is, there's a whole lot of people that are encouraging you, supporting you, helping you through that process. And often success breeds ego, and a lot of it. And Ken Blanchard, from a few years back, is retired now, but what an incredible leader he was.
One-Minute Manager and Who Moved My Chief.
One-Minute Manager. That's a great book today. I mean, you could read that book and say, I can do this.
Walking around, yeah.
He said simply this. He said, ego is etching God out. And if that doesn't say it all in a very short sentence, we have to recognize that our faith and how we practice that faith, and faith, you can look at it a lot of different ways, but you hope the guy in the other lane is going to stay in his lane when you're driving a car. That's faith. And flipping the light switch, that's faith. He said, ego is edging God out. And I thought it was just the coolest little component of what it takes to be a great leader is never forget where you start.
So it is the ego. And you get a lot of people who have some success and then they have those, you know, that's why we have terms like egomaniac, or they have narcissistic behavior and we see it. And it kind of kills things, because a leader today, I think, has to be compassionate, has to be encouraging, has to be supportive. It can't be about me, right? And we see this problem. We see it in our day-to-day lives. We see it with our leaders now. We see it with our politicians. We see it with business folks. There's arrogance that's out there sometimes. And it's a trap. It's a tough one. One of the areas that you focus on, which I found interesting, is discovery. So how do you guide businesses to conduct effective self-assessments? And I know you use DISC. And what kind of common blind spots should they be aware of?
That's a great question. If they become too interdependent on what's going on in the organization, they're going to miss what's going on in other industries and other fields where they're doing innovative things. And those innovative things can be plucked and pulled into what they're doing as well. So I believe it's a constant, never-ending improvement idea that you have to have in your head, and you have to be a constant, never-ending learner. So I'm a ferocious reader, to be honest with you, and very frank. I didn't read a book till I was 25. Mm-hmm. When I was in school, they'd give me that textbook, and I'd sweat and think I have to read this whole thing. And I found a book by Mortimer Adler, who wrote 83 books, but this particular book was How to Read a Book. And I read that book, and it changed my life. So I read constantly.
And I love the fact that you love to read. When we speak to audiences and we're traveling, I always ask in one segment of mine of my talks, I'll say, how many business books? And it shocks me. So if you're a doctor or lawyer, you have to go for CE credit. Professional sales and business people and entrepreneurs, or just people in general, there's no continuing education going on. Mm-hmm. They stop. And the magic is in the books. When I get interviewed for different programs or whatever, you always ask me, what's the key to success? I go, reading, it's in the
book. It's in the book.
And I ask people, you know, if they've read more than two or three books, I'll say, now, if I wanted to really drill down here, I'd ask you, what was the last book you read and what did you learn from it? But I won't put you in that spot, right? But it's you. It's about you. And you've got to keep upgrading your software. And if you don't, you're on an old operating system. What I've learned to do is every morning, 5:15, I'm in the gym. And for an hour, I read with my ears. So I put on my headphones. And you can get everything on Audible now, and I'll listen to it. If it's really good, I'll come back and take a look at it. I'll use Blinkist as well. I'll read short versions of books. And while I'm doing something, I can read a book and get just the 15 key points out of it, you know, in 10 minutes, 15 minutes. So I'm constantly looking. And it, for me, it's what I call stimulus response. I read something, and all of a sudden it triggers an action or a behavior or a thought that all of a sudden leads to something more. And you start to see those patterns. And I know you've seen it. So if I read your book, for instance, and I'm reading a book and you quote somebody, I'm going to go buy that book right away. I stop and I write that book. I want to know how you came up with that thinking. And then all of a sudden everybody thinks you're clever. And yet the answers have been in the books the whole time. It's just pay attention. Do you have a certain time of the day that you do that? As you're developing your skills around that, what's your daily routine look like?
Your routine is similar to mine. My wife had some surgery on her jaw, so the gym has been out for a couple of weeks, but that's where we spend some time. And the reading piece of this, I always have four books going someplace.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I get it up here as well. I love to listen to that because that's what puts it in the thought process that you need to continue to stretch. And I believe in something called just right challenges. And there are people who, for an example, oh, I don't know if I can do that. Well, try and just go just beyond your comfort zone and start with that. And I really feel like my job, and I think everyone's job. So again, when I say my job is to manage the moment, you're using those moments when you're in the gym in a productive way. And when we look at things in that context, we can scratch out job and put joy in its place. My joy is to manage the moment. And you turn it into a series of moments that continues to grow and stretch. And then you reach more of that potential. It's a beautiful thing. But there are a whole lot of people that think they can act themselves into right thinking. You know, I think, well, today's Monday, I'm going to be excited. And I think we'll wait until maybe Wednesday or Thursday. Well, you can't do that. You have to act yourself into right thinking. You can't think yourself into right acting. It's not possible. When you're in the gym, you got something on your head and you're listening and you're physically doing something and you're putting all that together. That's the balance we're talking.
Yeah. And it's a stimulus because the one thing I think we have as business leaders and as business people and people on the planet, citizens, is protect our confidence. As leaders, I think we have to protect the confidence of the people we serve. You know, we serve our families, our partners, our spouses. We need to protect their confidence. And for me, I always feel more confident when I read something and then I share that thing. So if I read it, I don't have to agree with it, but I might share with it. I'd say, hey, you know what? Hey, Tony, I read this awesome book. There's a great line in it on this. It made me think of you. And I use these books with my leaders that I work with, companies, organizations. Matter of fact, it's a secret weapon. Now I've disclosed this on the podcast, but I have a bunch of CEOs and corporate executives that I use books. Yeah. And I'll go get the latest book. And I don't care if you've read it or not. I'll deliver it to you. Have it do whatever and say, hey, this is great. I think you'll enjoy it. I'll even do summaries for them sometimes or little key points and draw it and send the book. I don't care if you read it. The damage is done. The minute I send it to you, the damage is done. So now you're going, oh, okay, good. And here's a nice little gem. And you start to see new ways to express ourselves. We see new thought, new innovation, and it makes us smarter. And it should be a lifelong thing. And it's not. We want to come home and we drown ourselves in something to distract us or focus. I love the fact that you pay attention to it and there's a value to it.
This morning, I had a doctor's appointment and my doctor asked me 2 years ago for a book recommendation. I gave it to him. And so he said, what are you reading now? And he said, what could you suggest? He said, they're pushing me into this leadership role. And he said, what would be good? And I said, I'll send you the cover of two books. And so I snapped it on my phone, fired him off to it. And he gets to choose which one he wants to use. But that kind of thing that you were describing, when you see something and you put it in someone's hand, you go so far as to get the book and hand it. I love that because that says, I care about you. I really care about you. And I care about what happens to you. And you're doing exactly what we're talking about. That's helping other people.
It's better than a dozen roses. And the best part is it passes all scrutiny. What happens is you can't even give some companies a mug with your logo on it. But when you send the CEO or we give the VP or whoever you're dealing with and you bring them a copy of a book with your card inside it, it just passes all scrutiny. And kind of like a Trojan horse into their mind.
Beautiful.
Now, you've got to work with some excellent companies. It's a who's who when you go to your website and you see all the companies you've worked with over the years and very notable clients. So without breaching any confidentiality, can you tell us about a transformation maybe or something that you witnessed in a company after applying some of your strategies and your thoughts and insight?
There was one thing pops in my head immediately, and that was with an automobile organization. And I don't know if you want me to mention the name. I certainly can.
Go ahead if you want to. Sure.
It was the Ford organization. And they hired an organization that I was working for as a contractor, and that was the Meritz Corporation. And Meritz is in St. Louis. They're one of the world's leading motivational companies. Now, their business model has changed, but when I was working with them, they were working with all of the major 500 companies, all of them. This contract that they had with Ford Motor Company was when Ford put together their one flag work. They had a lot of vendors, and they decided to certify their vendors. And then they broke that down to a very small number of vendors who passed their certification to sell to Ford. And so this was an incentivized program. And we were in Ford, I was in 28 Ford plants at the time. And I was there in the afternoon, in the morning, in the evening, in the middle of the night, talking to everyone at every level. And a big part of my role was to speak to the guy on the line. And they were looking for ways to develop and innovate what they were building and they were going right to the guy who was in the pit, looking up at the cars going over and looking for ideas. And that, to me, was the best example of what you're describing. I do one more real quick. There's another organization that sells grain to breweries, and they're all over the world. And they put together a Manage to the Forefront. They were number three when we started the program. 6 years later, they were number one. And that was exciting for me because I went in once a quarter and I spoke to 30 to 50 of their upscale employees, the people at the next level. And those people were taking this information back and using it. And it was a solid week we went through with F2 exams.
Yeah, no, excellent. When you work with those companies, and it's clear from the feedback that you obviously on your website have a talent for engaging and energizing your audience as well as companies, and you help them create a clear vision of what it is they're trying to create for themselves in the future. What are the steps that you take in helping them create that vision and then implementing that vision?
The implementing piece of it is a lot more complicated. Because when you're working with individuals and you have a short window of time with most executives, you have to give them as much as you possibly can in a short period of time. So I would ask them to write down, for example, what they plan to say. And then I'd say, with your permission, I would like to take this and these are your words and I want to use your words. But if we can, let's look at how it's structured and then see where we go with that. Because here's what I've discovered. When people that do not make presentations like you do or I do for a living,
right,
they have a tendency to think that they have to warm everybody up before they think they need to say what they need to say. And so I would find in the second or third paragraph of what they had written out for me, what they needed to say first. And that's the thing that they need to jump and start with. It's lead with that. I call it a monkey fist. And a monkey fist is a little knot of rope on the end of a heavy rope that they throw on the dock to board a ship. And so you take this piece of information that they have, it's their word in there, and you put that at the front of their presentation. And everybody goes, whoa. I got to listen to this. This is going to be important.
Yeah.
And then you validate.
Yeah. Interesting. For someone who wants to, one of the things that I know is called one of your superpowers is you help people create focus. You help organizations create focus, aim their sights. What are they aiming at? What's the goal to that? How do we overcome the distractions? How do we overcome the things that take us away from that? How do we actually effectively focus? So as a leader, what should we be focused on? How do we maintain and sustain that focus? And then how do we keep that focus as we implement throughout our teams?
Regardless of the panic that happens in every organization, regardless of that,
they
have to sit down and take a thinking break. And the thinking break, and this is me talking, this is out of a book. That thinking break means that everyone gets a voice here. And let's talk about this. And then let's look at and pose the problem, offer the solution, substantiate it with facts, and then we take an action. And if we do that, we're going to do a better job of managing that because of the distractions. They're always there. They're always going to be there. And it's little pieces that help them recognize that they have the answers to solve this problem. We all know that the problem you solve sometimes creates problems that you can't solve at the same level which you were thinking of. And that's not me talking. That's Einstein saying something.
Yeah.
Because he said it in, I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said.
That's right.
Thinking break.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a good little value bomb right there. Take time to be reflective and actually think. That's why I enjoy the walking. Yeah, I love reading. People ask me all the time. I just go, I'm constantly doing it. I have hundreds and hundreds of books, and I'm always looking just for the gems. I'll read a book and get one line out of it, and I'm going, that's a great line.
I go back to that. Carl Menninger said, I have yet to see a seriously disturbed person who maintained an attitude of gratitude. And to me, that is really important because an attitude of gratitude says that you're putting whatever that was in the right perspective. What can I learn from this? How can I go forward? What's the next step here? And regardless of the pain you're in, the struggle you're in, the frustration you're in, I've been rich and poor. It didn't make any difference. What did make a difference was how I managed those situations. That's what worked.
So on a personal level, if someone wants to improve their leadership skills, focus on what's important. How do we determine what are we going to work on, what to focus on, and what are going to be the attributes and priorities to help us go further? And as we continually evolve, what are we going to need to have? What don't we have today that we're going to need in the future?
That's great. That's a great question. I believe that when you're talking about your future, you need to have a trusted confidant that can act as your scribe, who is not going to value judge you in any way, shape, or form. They're just going to listen. And then what they listen to and take notes on, they feed back to what you said, and you have to accept the feedback that's coming without saying, oh, yeah, well, here's why I said that. I'm happy that this is why you said that, but please listen to what I want to share with you. And so help them get past that. Well, justifying what they've said. No, don't justify it. Thank them for the feedback.
Just thank you. Don't defend the position. Yeah. Just acknowledge it. Thank you. Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that because as speakers, so when you get done in an event and somebody comes up to you and they go, that was amazing. You were fantastic. You were the best thing since sliced bread. You whatever. I never believe them. I always thank them. I just go, oh, thank you very much. But they're projecting. I'm speaking to the choir, right? So somebody gets it. And if somebody comes up afterwards and says, you're terrible. You are rotten. You're the worst speaker I ever heard. I say, thank you. And I don't believe them for the same reasons. Because they're projecting. I think if you take an authentic approach, and we see a lot of terms like authentic leadership and what does that look like and how do we create authenticity and do it? It's about being natural, not getting past all the hypey things that we focus on for so many decades and years, just in our own culture.
Yes, I agree. And in my preparation for this, I just reflected on the little pieces that you asked me to reflect on. And this came from my heart. This didn't come from just up here. And we know that the vagal nerve connects the heart and the brain. And more messages go from the heart to the brain than brain to the heart. And when we're recognizing that, it means that there's a balance there that we need to have. Be more loving, be more open to different opinions. Instead of waiting for someone to say something you can charge back and attack with, say, wow, you know, okay, interesting. Makes all the difference in the world.
Well said. We were talking earlier about goal setting. You've got a new kind of angle, if you will, or a new approach to goal setting. You talk about setting goals as verbs and as adjectives. Unpack that for us.
Okay. I put together a little piece of information that I want to share with individuals. And I want to do this in the community as well. And it's helping people recognize that they've made mistakes, but it's okay to make a mistake. What did you learn from the mistake? Goaling as a verb is really saying, how do I continue to be enthusiastic? How do I maintain a persistence? And how do I get from where I am to where I need to go? And I believe there's some very specific things that you can do to make that happen. And it starts with something you and I do a lot of, and that's read. I remember the book, How to Read a Book by Mortimer Adler. Okay. And so one of the first books I read after I read that book was The Magic of Belief, and that's Claude Bristol. It's a fabulous classic book. And when I read it, he was getting on a steamship. I think they've changed some of that language, but that's where we have to start. So give them something and walk them through that with them and walk that path with them. So a scribe, in my mind, is the way to make that happen.
No, that makes sense. And be able to accept that feedback, no matter what it is, and not judge it and just get it as feedback. It's never personal. It always feels personal, but it never personal. There's intent, you know, and then there's impact, right? And we might have perfect intent, but the impact, we've all done that. You know, me included. So the key is to, like I say, the answer is in the books. And I think, as you say, each one's uniquely different. So it's not a cookie cutter solution. But if you start with the stimulus, start with the reading, start enhancing. I always like to use a quote from Ben Franklin. It gets quoted lots of times. I'm not sure if he really said it or not, but he said, empty the coins of your purse into your mind and your mind will fill your purse with coins. And I always love that. So the answer books. There's no excuse for it. We have all the best information, as you know, Tony, at our fingertips. The wisdom of the ages. We have access to the smartest knowledge, insights, and a lot of people just spend time on TikTok or YouTube and just watching things instead of actually learning something they can apply. So the key is to learn something and then go share that thing. Because when you teach it, as you know, that's when we really learn it, is when we can teach it. And that's how you get to learn it. So share it. Share the information.
Joe Lopez, the gentleman I mentioned earlier, I was down in Naples.
Yeah.
Here's what he said to his group. And I thought, this is great. This is right on target. He said, you have to be hungry. You have to be humble. And you have to work. And that's what he said. Those three things. If you do those three things, you'll get where you want to go. And work hard doesn't mean you're slaving at it. It means balancing those seven areas that we described. When we put balance in, that's hard work. It's hard work to remind yourself that all of them count.
Yeah, it's spinning those plates. Let's review those seven things again.
Yeah, physical, mental, spiritual, social, career, family, and finance.
Perfect. Yeah, and keep it simple. It doesn't have to be complex. Hey, this has been great. Tony, I know you've been helping people hit their mark and aim their sights at the right things, and we'll have all your contact information in the show notes. So thanks for sharing your time with us and your insights.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This podcast is created and associated with Summit Media. My executive producer is Beth Smith and director of research, Tori Smith. The fee for the show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting. This podcast is subject to copyright by Summit Media.
Goodbye.